Party date is January 16th, 2010. First off, I'm just grateful to be here, grateful that we have a room full of folks. We're part of this host committee and just a little relieved that's actually happening. I remember growing up, and I think we all, this is a super common statement from alcoholics, is that didn't feel a part of, didn't feel like I fit in. I was a part of team sports, I did dance, and I always felt like I was on the periphery of any activity that I was involved in. Even with my group of friends, I felt like I was, because I also did other things, I also felt on the periphery. I never felt like I was really in the midst of any group of people. And I think that that's accurate. I don't think I ever was like really like in the midst of it. And I have to check sometimes because my perception of what happened and what actually happened is often different. They talk about us having a disease of perception, and that's very accurate. So then, my alcohol, it made that feeling of being on the periphery irrelevant. I felt okay regardless of where I was. And I remember, when my drink really picked up, I would go to parties. But I was the kind of snob that, I didn't want to share, the cheap beer. I wanted to have, I had my own secret stash. So, I didn't want to, there were still ways that I would pull myself away from social situations. And the reality was, even when I did go to parties, I ended up, in the basement or in someone's room participating in outside issues, right? And it's funny because just, a few minutes ago, we were having a discussion, problem-solving something on the committee. And so we had naturally stepped away from where everyone was, but we kept moving further and further and further away. And it was just funny to look, we're here, we still are, a couple years sober, still finding withdrawing. So I just operated on the periphery. And part of that was that one of my survival tactics growing up was to fly under the radar, to go unnoticed. I didn't get in a lot of trouble drinking because I just didn't I did not draw attention to myself. And so that's just how I've always operated. And it's been challenging in sobriety to change that behavior. I remember I got sober, I went to a treatment facility, and I turned actually 23 in treatment, and that just happened to be the weekend of a conference. And so it was my first conference, I'd been sober about 3 months, and I was in my crying phase, where I cried every day for a month, and so that was really fun to go out in public when I'm crying every day, right? And so now we're going to this conference, we're going to an AA dance. And I'm just miserable. I ended up writing, of course, again, separately from the rest of the group. Everyone went, and I managed to somehow get out of going in the van and writing with one of our techs or something, and just sitting in her car and crying the entire way to the AA dance, and getting there and just wanting to die. And I have a lot of experiences wanting not to be, not being okay in sobriety, And so I've moved several times also in sobriety, and each, I moved back to Tennessee and just never decided that, I literally made a decision that I wasn't going to try to make friends. And that was a terrible idea. I was absolutely miserable. And then I moved out to Flagstaff, and I kind of, again, stayed on the periphery. I wasn't sure if I was going to stay. And that was always my excuse. I'm not going to get close to anyone because I might leave again. And that makes for a really sad, lonely life. And, of course, I'd leave again because I don't have any friends because I never even tried. Some life happened, and I made the decision that I needed to get some friends. It was a conscious decision. I remember talking to my sponsor about, I need friends because I'm tired of being alone. And it took, effort, asking, just kind of inserting myself into people's lives and getting involved in service. Getting involved in service has been really helpful because it gives me purpose to be in a community, right? So I feel like if I have a purpose, it makes some of that interaction a little bit more comfortable. One of the biggest things that I've learned that's made social interaction so much easier is that what other people think of me is none of my business. Right? Like, what makes social interaction so uncomfortable is because I'm terrified of the thought that y'all might not like me, or that y'all might not want me as your friend. And really, that's none of my business. And if I'm true to myself, and if someone doesn't like me because I'm being myself, like that's, I'd rather them not like me because I'm being myself than like me because I'm spending my entire time fixated on thinking what they want to see of me. And that's been really tricky and really a long process, right? Like, I've done some inventories. I've done a couple four-steps, a couple fifth-steps that really have really put a spotlight into onto those insecurities. Another big issue of why I don't want to get close to people is, again, like, it comes back to abandonment, not being loved, not being received. There was some evidence to support that, those fears. So I'm not really sure how long I'm supposed to talk for. I already forgot. We're good? Okay. So, I am notoriously bad for saying really inappropriate things in, like, new situations. Like, I just started I'm starting graduate school, and, my default mode when I enter in a new situation is to pull back and observe and to, like, gauge the situation and, like, label everything. You know, like, I'm doing what I'm afraid that other people are doing towards me, but, like, gauge the situation. But I have a really morbid sense of humor, and inevitably, like, someone says something, and then I'm 28 years old. I look like I'm, like, 20, right? So everyone's like, I can't believe you're so, like, oh, you look so young. And my, like, go-to response is, like, it's all the virgin blood I drink. You know, and, like, that's the first thing that comes to mind, right? And so, like, within 30 seconds of an interaction, like, that's what I'm going for. And, you know, like, that just... And as many times as I get, like, someone says that to me, that's still, like, what I want to say. It's not the best opener, right, for every situation. And I get really nervous, and so I tend to say, like, kind of weird shit. And that's just, you know, I'm coming to the point in my life where I'm, like, really embracing that, yeah, I'm going to say some really dumb and weird things, and... let's not pretend like I'm not going to say that stuff the entire time I know somebody. So it is sometimes good to go ahead and get some of that awkward. Just go ahead and see what the response is. I'm sitting at this table with all these other, like, students. And, you know, most of my career was in college. And, I'm not really sure how to be a student. I don't know what that looks like sometimes, and so it was really, the good news is that I knew some people who were in that, who are also in that orientation, which really, when I know at least one or two other people, like, I feel immediately like I got a safe space, and that's, I now know my comfort zone. Like, I know some safe places to go to, you know? Like, I'm going into my orientation and I'm texting my sponsor. I'm like, I'm so nervous! You know, like, I reach out and I let people know that I'm nervous. You know, I'm not walking into a situation anymore where no one knows that I'm scared or I'm nervous, you know? Like, I have gotten to the point where I can communicate with others when I'm going into a situation I'm uncomfortable with. And that's also taken time, right? Like, having that relationship with other people, like, not only just, like, having these, like, rings of intimacy, if you will, with friendships, like, I have a core group of people that really know who I am, and I confide in those people when I'm in scary situations. I have one of those people, right? You know? Like, they're here. So that's really, and that's something I never had before when I was drinking. Like, I went into social situations with no safety net. I went into all kinds of situations with absolutely no safety net, and I went into them completely alone. I had no one who really supported me. No one knew that I was scared. And the biggest, I think, you know, there's been lots of changes that have happened over the past 5 years, and one of them is not only letting go of what you think of me, but also having people that maybe if I do just fail in a social, in any kind of situation, I do have a group of, a small group of people that, who don't care. And that's really big. And all of that has taken work. Like, it wasn't like I got sober and all of a sudden I felt comfortable in life. It's taken work, and it's taken walking through uncomfortable situations and looking at the other end and coming through the other end still sober. And looking not only at, yeah, I stayed sober, but what else could I have done differently? How else can I improve? And so really looking, taking a magnifying glass to my behaviors, and not only my behaviors, but my attitudes about situations. Because my attitude about a situation is really going to affect how I operate in that situation, but also the outcome, and then again, my perception at the end of that event. So, I don't know, it's tricky, right? Because there's, you know, this isn't something that I do often, and is end up in situations like this. And but I have faith now that, like, even like I have a hard time walking, right? And so I trip like 6 times walking around out here, and like it doesn't matter. Like, I'm gonna be okay, right? Like, I will fall down and bust my face. I have bruises on my hips right now because I run into things. But, like, it's going to be okay. Like, I don't have to drink over it. I don't have to hide under my bed about it, because I loved hiding under my bed about it. Like, that was a really great place. One of my safe zones, if you will. And that I have faith, but it, again, like, so much of it doesn't. What I've made so many mistakes already that I've discovered, like, most of them don't matter. And that's been, that perspective has been a blessing. So I'm grateful to be here. Welcome to the newcomers. My first conference, I went to my first young people's conference at like 3 years sober. I hid in my room most of the time. Like, I went and got like a room to myself and hid there for most of the conference. And then I think I went and sat by the pool and like read to myself and had very little interaction at my first young people's conference. And I was pretty uncomfortable and pretty miserable. And so when I get over myself and get over my fears of what you think of me, that's really when I can have fun. You know, like, when I am obsessing, I don't have much fun. So I would encourage you to try to shut down the little hamster running around inside your head, and be okay with whatever happens. So, anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. And up next, we have Bill from Flagstaff.
I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like trying to figure out how I'm going to talk about the fact that I don't like to talk, and it's just, I don't know. The first time I shared my story, I like spoke for 15 minutes and I just completely shut down. It was like this big speaker meeting, it was just like a huge disaster. So it'll be fun, we'll see how long I talk this time. I guess a big part of my social anxiety is that I am dyslexic, and it's not something I talk about a lot, because people make like really bad assumptions about you if you're dyslexic. Like, I had a hard time learning to read, but I mean, I read and write like really well now. What I have trouble with is like if I'm reading aloud from a sheet of paper, or if I'm just like talking like I am now, I tend to just completely jumble up my words. So I really just hate talking in general. But yeah, so like growing up wasn't that easy for me because like I was dyslexic and I was, you know, I had trouble in class, and then I was kind of weird then, and I just kept on being weird all the way through high school. And I mean, I did a lot of drugs and drank a lot in high school, but it wasn't with people. It was like, I was always like really confused by the people who got high and then went to class, because like, why would you go? Why wouldn't you just like get high and then just go back home? But that seemed way better to me. Yeah, but when I got to college, I mainly like smoked pot when I was in high school, and I didn't drink that much, so I just didn't have access to it. But when I got to college and I started drinking a shit ton, I felt really great while I was drinking because I could do anything I wanted to, and it didn't really bother me. And then the next morning, I would like completely freak out about everything I did. Oh my god, I hope those guys didn't care that I like woke up in their hot tub. I just like feel awful about that, so I'm gonna go get drunk again so I don't care anymore. And yeah, that definitely took a turn for the worse. Having social anxiety while being in AA for me just means that, I mean, I'm not like gonna do certain things. It's like, I'm never going to be in a crowded room and like walk up to someone and be like, "Hi, my name is Bill. What's your name?" It's just not something I'm ever going to do. And I'm fine with that. Like, I generally don't do these speaking commitments. I generally don't share my story because I really hate it. And I kind of made an exception for this one because it's kind of on topic. I don't speak a lot of meetings, but you don't really have to speak a lot of meetings. I generally hear exactly what I would have said at meetings anyway, so if someone already said it, it's just like I'm repeating them. It's like, no, nowhere, you're not going to get sober from speaking off of meetings. You're going to get sober from working the 12 steps with a sponsor. So that's my feeling on that. But yeah, it's like, social anxiety, it's like, sort of an advantage in a way. The same way dyslexia is actually a huge advantage, because what you don't realize is that people who are dyslexic see everything in a different way. Like, they have a whole different perception on the world that normal people don't have. And it's like, when you have social anxiety, it's like, there's going to be certain barriers, but you're also going to be better for them. It's like, I end up spending a lot of time by myself. I end up being in my own head a lot, and that's actually awesome now. It's like, I used to hate being by myself. I used to hate being lonely, but now I feel comfortable in my own skin. And I really actually have social anxiety to thank for like being comfortable like in my own head and not having to have other people around me to like be comfortable. So I took a 3-week motorcycle trip to get to Flagstaff, and I was pretty much by myself the whole time, and it was an awesome experience. It was very meditative, and it was really great. So I guess it's kind of like everything is like that, is that if something is going to be hard for you, then it's also going to be good for you. So you should be thankful for your shortcomings. That's all I'm going to say. Thanks, guys.
All right. And up next on our panel, we have Kelly from Flagstaff.
Kelly.
Yay. I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be at ASCIPA 2015. I'm excited for this weekend. I want to thank the host committee for putting this conference together. I had the opportunity to bid for ASCIPA in 2010 and again in 2011 because we didn't get it, and then host in 2012. So it's been awesome watching, you know, new people get to come in and bid and put on a conference. It's really cool that I get to be a part of a process that's much bigger than me today. Social anxiety. I really relate to a lot of what Katie and Bill said. I like their perspectives. And, my sobriety date is March 29, 2009. I've been to ASCIPAW almost every single year since I got sober. I've been to a lot of WACIPAW conferences. I just went to SLACIPAW. I've been to ACIPAW. I've been to a lot of young people's conferences. There's different levels of uncomfortability, you know, but I often get resentful like that. Well, I really don't like to speak. It makes me really uncomfortable. It's not something I enjoy doing. But then again, I get resentful when people don't ask me to speak, you know, like I think any good alcoholic. And as they were planning this conference and putting together the panels, I was like, come on, like, why won't someone ask me to speak on a panel? Like, I got it going on, you know? And that's obviously just, like, my selfishness and self-centeredness. And then I went to the host committee meeting on Saturday, and Dan, the program's chair, announced that, you know, they needed spots for panels, and if anyone wanted to speak, to let him know. And I was like, oh, damn, you know, now I actually have to take some action. And thankfully, you know, by the suggestion of one of my sponsees, I was like, all right, I always complain to myself that I don't speak on panels, even though I really don't want to, and here's my opportunity to do it. So thanks, Dan, for the opportunity to speak today. And the reason why I share that story is because I think it relates to how I deal with my social anxiety. I went to the Flagstaff Roundup this year, and this girl introduced herself to me, and I'd met her like 4 times before that, and you know, of course that hurt my pride a little bit, but thankfully as a result of this program I was kind of able to think like, well, what's my part in this, you know? And I took it really personally, and I realized, like, I really don't make an effort to make people remember me, you know? Like, I'm really comfortable just hanging out in the background, not introducing myself, not talking to people. But then when I meet people and they don't remember me, I take it personally. So today, because of this program, I get to look at my part in that. And that wasn't the first time that's happened to me. That's happened to me many times. And maybe it's a normal thing. I don't know. I like to think I'm unique. So I feel like it only happens to me, and today I get to do something about that. Like I said, my sobriety date is March 29th of 2009, but I came to AA about a year before that, and I was actually at ASCIPAW in 2008 when it was here at Mormon Lake Lodge. I had about 3 weeks of sobriety, and I came out here for the day with a couple of other people. And, you know, you kind of, before you go to a conference, like, you hear people talk about them, and people are like, oh, they're crazy, you know, there's people doing, like, cake stands with Monster or whatever. So, you know, I already felt really uncomfortable in my skin, and so the thought of going to an event where there's, like, a concentrated group of sober young people really, really freaked me out. But I had the willingness to go, and I went, and they had this activity called Sober Olympics, and for whatever, I don't know why, but for some reason I did that, and I, like, did some stupid stuff, and then afterwards I was like, oh my god, I'm so embarrassed, you know, like, everyone thinks I'm so dumb, and I was just, like, so focused on what other people thought of me, and I brought my iPod with me, and I wasn't even here for the whole weekend, I was just here for, like, a few hours, and I couldn't even handle being around people for the whole day, and I had to, like, take a break and walk out in the woods by myself and listen to my iPod for, like, half an hour. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, that's a much better way of dealing with it than, like, running off and getting a drink, because before that was my solution, you know? So I'm grateful that I did that. And that night at the dance, I stood in the corner with another girl, and we just, like, made fun of people and talked about how awkward we felt, you know, and it made me feel better in that moment, but I think that that type of behavior really aggravates my social anxiety, because I feel like people are doing that to me, you know, like, the more I judge others and pick other people apart, the more that I think other people are doing that to me. But, you know, sometimes I still participate in that kind of behavior, but at least I can, like, make the, connect the dots a little bit today. But anyway, when I went to that ASCII Pod in 2008, like, I definitely did not think that I would be here, like, 7 years later sharing on a panel with 6 years of sobriety. And I'm really grateful that I just had the willingness to continue to show up and be a part of. Yeah, and I think just like, well, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a daily drinker. I had no concept of the idea that taking a drink could be a choice. I remember the first time I heard that in a meeting, that someone had the choice to not drink that day, and I was like blown away. Like, how you have the choice to not drink, and I don't think that I even recognized that I didn't have that choice until I heard someone else say that. And I was like, damn, I want that. And so knowing that that was a possibility gave me the willingness to get a sponsor and start working the steps. But up until that point, you know, alcohol was really, it was my solution. I felt really uncomfortable in my skin, and it made me be able to feel like I could interact with people my age, and it made me feel like I had something to bring to the table. You know, I didn't really have a lot of value in my personality or who I am, but I could drink I could drink a lot, and that impressed people. And my friends in high school would always tell me, like, you look so sweet and innocent, but you can drink a lot. It's kind of weird. And that really, like, that gave me a lot of pride, and it was kind of like my identity. It sort of became my identity. Like, this is what I do. This is how I relate to others. And of course, that didn't last long for me. My disease progressed really quickly. And within a couple of years, I was incapable of having relationships with other people. You know, I would, like, maybe meet some people, and we would hang out a couple times, and then I would do something really crazy in a blackout, and they wouldn't invite me over anymore. So my drinking really brought me to a place of isolation where I drank a lot by myself every day. And I think that isolation also became a part of my identity, and I thought, I'm a loner, you know, and it's just the way I am, and I don't need anyone, and I know that they don't want me around, so that's fine. And I think, you know, like they say, when you come to AA and you make a list of what you want, you're gonna sell yourself short. And when I came to this program, really, I didn't even really want physical sobriety. until I was, like, going to meetings and drinking and kind of, like, seeing, you know, both sides of the spectrum. And I had to really drag along the bottom for a little while before I did actually, you know, before I came to terms with what it meant to be an alcoholic. It took me a long time to give up that idea that alcoholic doesn't mean that I love to drink and I'm really good at it. An alcoholic means that it's the first drink that gets me drunk and I have an obsession and an allergy, and once I start drinking, I can't stop. And when I don't have alcohol or, you know, other substances, it's all I can think about. So when I finally came to that realization, you know, all I really wanted was just to not drink. Actually, now that I say that out loud, I don't, that's not really true. I thought that that was my problem. I thought that alcohol was my only problem, and I thought that if I could get physically sober, all the other problems would go away, you know? So when I came to AA, I wasn't expecting to, like, make friends. I wasn't expecting to have connections with other people, nor did I think that that's what I wanted. I thought that I really liked being alone. I thought that I didn't like spending time with people my age. I thought that I couldn't relate to people my age. I told myself a lot of stories. And to back that up, I had the social anxiety. Like, I would go to a meeting, not want to talk to anyone, not wanting to talk to anyone, not wanting to share, and feeling like that was good for me, you know? And that just kept me separate. But once I got a sponsor and started working the steps and got that physical sobriety, it was like definitely a higher power did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And a big part of that was that I kept showing up. Like, I kept showing up to young people's meetings. When they went out for coffee afterwards, I showed up. You know, I showed up at ASCII Pop. I showed up at these things that I was so uncomfortable. And if I listened to that voice in my head, I would have ran the other direction. You know, but I didn't listen to it, and I continued to show up. And it was really awkward. And, you know, plenty of times where, like, I said something dumb, and it turned, you know, my brain would turn it into this huge deal, like anyone really cared, or like anyone would even be thinking about it 5 minutes later. But I would just be filled with like this mortification, and I would obsess about it. But I continued to show up, and I continued to work my steps. And I think that continues with me to this day. You know, like I often think that, the steps aren't going to help me with this problem. You know, like, yeah, the steps helped me get sober, but when it comes to this, like, this is a bigger deal than that. Like, I'm a grown up. I'm in school. I have a job. Like, you know, I have these things in my life that the steps aren't going to work. But when I have the willingness to work the steps, and again, as I've done it a few times in sobriety, looking at things I'm powerless over other than alcohol, like always including the drugs and alcohol, but looking at other things such as other people, you know, my relationships with people and those kinds of things, like the steps have never failed me. And I think that's really been my experience with my social interactions too, is, you know, just like Katie said, like for me, the social anxiety, I think it's really part of my obsession because it keeps me thinking that I'm different. It keeps me thinking that I'm separate. It keeps me thinking that I don't belong. And that type of thinking is eventually going to lead me back to a drink. Like for me, now I know that I need connection with others to stay sober. I need a support network. And that means that I'm going to have to be in some uncomfortable situations. When I had about 9 months of sobriety, I went to Wacky Paw in Eugene, Oregon, and I went with a couple other people from Flagstaff. We drove up there, and of course, like, I was looking at how every way I'm different, how every way I don't fit in, you know, I don't listen to this kind of music, I don't belong here, and I was, like, standing back in a corner by myself, and this guy came up to me and introduced himself and was like, "Are you having a good time?" And I was like, "No, not really. I feel like I don't fit in. I feel like, you know, uncomfortable. I don't really want to talk to anyone." And he was like, "Some people would call that selfish and self-centered." And at first I was like, "Screw you, dude. Like, I'm hurting here. Come on," you know. But that kind of sunk in a little bit, and I thought about it, and I was like, he's totally right. You know, that voice that tells me that I can't relate, that I'm different because I don't like the same kinds of movies as someone, you know, all that kind of stuff that I tell myself matters really doesn't matter. And I'm really grateful for that knowledge today. When I was thinking about this panel and like some things that I wanted to say, I realized, and a lot of times I don't really realize that something's been removed from me until like I get the opportunity to reflect on it. And I realized that this issue of social anxiety has pretty much been removed from me. And that's really just a process of working the steps, being of service, and fellowshipping with other alcoholics. Like, I certainly still get uncomfortable, but as doing those things that I need to do to recover from alcoholism today, like, I'm okay with who I am. I used to always compare myself to other women and felt like I didn't add up. And today I still do that sometimes, but I don't do it in such a way where, like, I'm down here and everyone else is up there. You know, today I can compare myself and recognize that there's differences without it meaning that I'm less than or not worthy. And a couple weeks ago, I was at a women's meeting here in Flagstaff, and it was a bigger meeting than usual. There were a lot more women there than were usual, and like women were coming in and giving each other hugs and saying hi, and I'm sitting on the couch, and like, of course I made it all about me. I was like, no one's giving me a hug, like that girl's not saying hi to me, you know, and I turned it into this whole thing about me. You know, and I realized that there's that selfishness, you know, that self-pity, that thinking that I don't belong or that people don't like me, you know. But just like Katie said too, I kind of looked around the room and there were like three women in that room that I really love, and I know that they love me, and I know that they're there to support me, and like, that's really what all I need today. I don't need everyone to like me or everyone to, you know, to want to give me a hug when I see them. Like, all I need is a core group of people. And that's really been so central to my recovery. And like I said, you know, I think that that's something that I would have sold myself short on when I came into this program. Like, I wasn't looking for friends. I wasn't looking to be vulnerable with other women or to have close relationships. But now it's something that I wouldn't trade for anything in the world. So I'm really grateful for my experience with social anxiety, because I think I've learned like a lot of good lessons from it, and to know that I think with recovery all things are possible, you know, and the idea of like speaking in front of a group of young people would have been like so terrifying that I probably would have thrown up, you know, 6 years ago, and today I can do it, and it's like, it's such a gift, you know, that I get to share my experience, strength, and hope today. So welcome to the newcomers. I hope everyone has an awesome weekend, and I'll pass.